joining us today, the very sexy, dynamic host of the hit podcasting show Sex with Emily, Miss Emily Morse.
Baby, take off your coat.
Next on The Culture Catch.
Real slow. Baby, take off your shoes. Yeah, I'll take your shoes. Baby, take off your dress. Yes, yes, yes. You can't leave your hat on. You can't leave your hat on. You can't leave your hat on.
Today's show is brought to you by our friends at Mophie. Remember, Mophie loves you, not because they've got the coolest iPod accessories, but because they're very cool. Check out Mophie, MOPHIE.com.
So joining us today on The Culture Catch, one of our favorite podcasters and soon to be a superstar beyond the world of podcasting, Emily Morse, Sex with Emily. Emily, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure, Dusty. Thanks for having me.
All right. Tell me, how did you start the show and why?
How and why? I was realizing that all of my conversations were turning to sex and relationships. Maybe it's me, maybe it's the state of the world, but I think everybody's trying to figure it out. Is he the one? Is she the one? Am I doing the right thing? Does it matter? Am I too big, too small? And I just invited a bunch of friends over, interviewed them, stuck it up as a podcast on the internet, at my website. I just became, people loved it.
Did you have a blog before you had the...
I did not.
But so you just thought that maybe this would be a really fun thing to do?
I thought, and they weren't just friends. They were people I knew from, you know, married, straight, gay, single. I invited them all over, interviewed one at a time, and just thought they had interesting perspectives. And they're honest. I have real people on the show telling their stories about sex. And I just thought that it interests me. Maybe it would interest some other people.
And before you knew it, you had like a hit show... globally, because, I mean, once it's on the internet, it's global.
Yep, we have listeners all over the world.
And you're, so, I mean, from what point did you realize, like, okay, I'm going to post this and we'll see what happens? Was it 3 weeks in, a month in? Was it instantaneous?
I'd say it was about a month in. We started getting a lot of feedback from people who just found it. And this was about a year and a half ago, so really when podcasting just started to take off. And we started getting emails and letters, and people were thanking us, and, wow, I never thought I could ask my wife to do this thing, and I feel like I'm normal now, and I'm not a freak. And just every month, we got more and more downloads, and then I got offered to do a show on a live talk station here, CBS Radio Free FM, 106.9 Free FM, and so I started doing a live show with callers on Saturday nights.
And that's pretty quick. I mean, it's pretty quick to make that migration from the podcasting world into traditional media.
I guess it was about 4 months.
Wow. I think a lot of podcasters would love to have that kind of success. I mean, you know, Ariana Huffington does with her blog, and the guy that does the gossip column in Gawker and a couple others, but they don't really have that. Well, I guess Ariana, because she does national shows, but to make an actual leap from just podcasting into radio. And how they really feel. We see how radio shows dump their content into podcasts. But it's different starting where you did.
Yeah.
And having a real grassroots campaign. And do you think that's because today newspapers used to have the Dear Abby columns, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe they weren't as racy or as forward or as open. And the internet certainly allows you to have that kind of...
Yeah. I could be much more, you know, open and people can say whatever they want. When I was doing my podcast, now I do have FCC regulations to contend with. Well, my show's on at 11 o'clock at night, so there is an indecency window, meaning you can be more indecent after 11. But I still, there's certain things I can't say. But I do think that it's just that the information's not out there. I mean, when people, they look at me and they say, oh, Dr. Ruth. I mean, Dr. Ruth hasn't had a show in I don't know how many years.
Was she really a doctor?
I heard she wasn't really a doctor.
Yeah. And Dr. Phil isn't really a doctor.
No,
either.
He's not a doctor either. Yeah. So, hey, there you go. I'm not a doctor either.
But you're not, pretending to be. But
I'm
that's why you have the appeal, because people feel like they're talking to maybe a woman friend.
Right.
Or, you know, the older sister of a friend that you might have lusted after or something. You know, your sister's...
Is that how you feel?
Yeah, always. Always.
Well, good. Whatever it is, I just think that the people... What I hear over and over again is that people feel like there's no other place to get this kind of information. Because you go online and you can go to, like, different websites to look at, I've got this problem, is this a dysfunction? But as far as like the real conversation about what's going on, and I hear from a lot of men, I really want her to do this to me, and I'm not sure how to ask, because guys don't, you know, you
we're
guys
Vikings,
don't talk.
We're
you
afraid.
And Richard, you sit and talk about your sex life? No. We women, we're trained that way. We do it. We talk about everything. So I think we help a lot of men and women.
You talk about everything. You've
we
just
do
shattered
everything.
Not
what you think about.
All right. Okay.
Not the things that you think.
Right.
But the things that we're like, oh, so he did this, and how do I do this? And, you know, I'm being very evasive right now. But, you know, you get the picture, I think.
Okay, I'm speechless. I don't know what to say to that.
No, we share
no,
stories.
No, but I think it is true, because I think the internet makes it feel like it's more of an intimate conversation mm-hmm. than maybe a radio show would, because you don't have that instant feedback.
Right.
You don't know if other people are listening in. They might listen in after the fact, after the show's been posted.
Right.
But during that actual call time, well, now you have the radio.
Now
thing,
I have the live show, yeah.
But it was different then. How did you get people to call in before you had the radio show?
I mean, it's kind of changed formats, and I toy between, especially now with, you know, new media. I really can still do the old podcast, which means I would do an interview for an hour, and then I would edit it to a tight 30-minute interview.
Okay.
But now I do a 3-hour show with callers, and we just put that up in 20-minute segments,
okay.
9 20-minute segments. And so, but I find that a lot of our listeners are not the live people, the live listeners. It's people who, you know, download it Monday morning and take it to work and put it on their iPod.
Really?
So a lot of the emails we get are people who, you know, they still enjoy the fact that
it's time shifted.
Yeah, and you know, I was interesting because I thought people might be, oh, that's annoying with the calls, and it's already, you know, it was Saturday night and it's Monday and I missed it, but I haven't gotten that at all. And the callers just, I think it's been a year now that we've been on live, so there's some people call every night, or they're just
right.
driving around, they're like, oh, this is the exact problem I was having, and they call up and they confess.
You had a guy come up to you right in the salon the other night and said, I'm a long-time listener.
Yeah.
And wasn't that kind of freaky when you...
It is freaky, because I still don't, you know, I don't meet a lot of people on the street or saying, oh, I called into your show. But he said, I've called in a few times.
Right.
Told me his name,
right.
I remembered his story, and then he came in and did a live confession. And
wow.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It feels good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing, that's why I'm doing it. It wasn't like I planned it out and was listening to, what do people need for sex out there? What's the right shows? It was, this interests me. I love interviewing people and talking to them about sex. And I just thought, if it interests me, maybe some other people will find it engaging. And
are you ever ashamed, bashful, embarrassed? Does it ever hit you, knock you for a loop?
Not really. Not, you know, more and more I'm comfortable. I feel like I've heard a lot of things. But like last week I had a guy on, he wrote a book called My Girlfriend Comes to the City and Beats Me Up. And he's really into S&M. And
that's
he's
really
a, male.
A title?
Yeah, that's
a title.
Great title. My Girlfriend
Punk
Comes,
rock title.
Exactly.
Man.
His name is Stephen Elliott. And he is a male submissive. He's straight.
Right.
But he likes to be dominated.
Right.
And well, I've heard about it, you know.
We used to call those guys wussies in school.
I know. That's what they called him as well, as you can imagine. But no, he's straight. But he's like, yeah, I like it when she beats me and cuts me. And I mean, it was stuff that was really, the book
really
was
intense.
Very, very intense. But
yeah.
What I say is, yeah, there's some freaks. We have some things on the show that you might not really be into. But I feel like from everyone's story, we can glean some kind of truth. Like
mm-hmm.
there could be guys like, well, I don't want my wife to punch me in the face. But if she blindfolds me one night when she's doing that thing that I love, well, hey, that'll feel good.
Right.
That could be interesting to try. Try something new.
And do you think because maybe these younger generations don't use religion as the moral barometers for their lives, they don't have any conduit to really allow themselves to, you know, maybe have defined parameters in their life? And do you offer maybe, I don't know, solace for that?
Yeah,
or,
maybe.
Or a sounding board, or just to say.
I think maybe it's a lot of people have been repressed by religion, by the things that they grew up with, that maybe they're feeling like I can release some things. Like I was told not to masturbate, or I was told that sex was wrong, or if I had sex, I was going to get pregnant, or I was going to go blind if I touched myself too much. And I think that now we can laugh that off, but I think there's a lot of people that how you're socialized, if you're hearing that every day, and you're going to church, or you went to Catholic school, you might be a little messed up right now. You might have some issues that have carried over. So we talk about that a lot. Because everything in sex goes back to, I think, like everything in life goes back to a lot of early
childhood
thing. People eroticize their traumas, or they block their traumas, and so that there's a lot of, you know, sexual dysfunction.
I think it's fantastic too that you get to use the internet to be the spokeswoman person for a generation that, you know, typically traditional media might not approach this the right way.
Right.
You know, they might commercialize, and then they've got sponsors who say, oh, you can't talk about that. These are the taboo issues, and we can't have this caller in. You know, and you're completely free of that kind of
I am free
blockage.
Of that. I am free. I mean, I still do my show. It's on CBS radio, so there's a
some
little
parameters.
But not what you would think. And I'm not going to, because I'm still doing my podcast on my own.
Okay.
But I'm not going to keep moving forward with them you know, because I can continue to make the show that way that I want to make. Because that's how I started it.
Right.
I mean, I don't really, I love that I have the live studio and the format and the callers calling in, but I still don't want to have to compromise what I want to do. And I don't feel like I've, you know, we can't swear, you can't say the dirty words, but I feel like, I mean, if you listen to Howard Stern, you know, he got a lot of things across without having to say it all.
Right, right. And it's certainly, I mean, violence is allowed. Why isn't sexuality allowed? It's really odd that, you know, you can show someone's head exploding on TV and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things I can't say.
The explosion of an orgasm.
Exactly. Cannot say that. You'd be beeped right now.
Really?
No, you can say explosion. You can, maybe you can say explosion, but you can't say things that, what exploded from the orgasm, and where it went once it exploded.
What was left behind.
Yeah, exactly. You can't say that. But I've been, you know, learning. I don't get, we have a delay button. So some people get dumped.
Thank God we don't have delay buttons on the internet.
No delay. I know. Should we swear?
No. Yeah, we can say what, you can say some dirty words.
I don't really feel
go
like
ahead.
It. I lost
no,
them all.
You don't, need to, really.
I don't need to.
No, you don't. And I think that's what's like, liberating. People think, oh, you can say anything on the internet, but really in most conversation, people use expletives to punctuate the enthusiasm of a conversation.
Exactly.
They're not using it to connotate something.
And what I've found, too, is that a lot of times it can be distracting.
Right.
If I'm being much more explicit and graphic and I'm swearing, I mean, I'm really just trying to get, you know, get some information across.
Right.
And I don't feel like I always need to say all the words that you think you need to say. Hold on, my phone's...
Your phone is...
I'm waiting for my lawyer to call me. Okay, that wasn't my lawyer. I'm waiting for him to call. Okay, we'll put the vibration back on.
A vibrating phone. Go figure.
I know. Oh, you know what?
I love that.
Speaking of vibrating phone, we get a lot of free toys sent to us. You probably get free music.
We get cool
guitars.
Stuff. Music, stuff. We need more of it. You know,
I get sex toys.
Right.
And I got this, have you heard of the Oh My Bod?
Oh My Bod.
The Oh My Bod is a vibrator for your iPod. So you put it on your iPod and it vibrates. And the different music that you play, there's different vibrations. And they wrote it up in Wired Magazine. They're like, they gave you a playlist. That was like the best playlist.
This will get you the maximum orgasm.
Exactly.
This is the rating scale.
Yeah.
What were some of the songs you've tried?
I don't really discuss my own sex life.
Very clever girl. Very, very good.
I don't really talk about myself that much.
Well, I think that's probably why people like it. You seem very innocent as well.
It's funny. Someone said, the guy, Steven, who gets beat up, he's like, you're so innocent.
Yeah.
I'm not that innocent. I seem that innocent.
But you seem kind of provincial.
Huh.
I mean, if I started asking you personal questions, would you answer them?
I don't know. Let's see. What are you going to ask me?
How can I put this without sounding like a chauvinist? Have you done threesomes?
Have I done threesomes? Have you?
I'm asking the questions here.
I don't know.
I think that's admission. That's
I'm
a yes.
I think if I talked about that in my show, I'm trying to remember. No,
I think that's every guy.
Very,
well, I want to mention that's guy.
Yeah.
That's a guy's super guy's fantasy,
week.
Right?
This comes up every week.
Can I bring home a girl? You know, a girl into my relationship.
They're kind of overrated, I think.
Are they?
What I found. No, well, guys love them.
Well, you know,
like
my
they can destroy relationships if both partners. A lot of times, people call up and I'm like, "How do you?" Because what I talk about all the time on the show is how do you keep your sex life interesting?
Right.
How do we keep it sexy? We've been together 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and the guy's like, "Let's go get another chick and bring her home."
Right.
Which might sound good in theory, but a lot of times if the couple haven't negotiated the terms, you know, you can't kiss her, you can't whatever, it doesn't work out.
Well, Tommy Lee said foursomes are much better because this way nobody gets left out.
Right.
And I think that's pretty smart.
And I have a lot
three
of
girls and a guy. I love that.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, there you go.
Yeah, I don't want two girls, two guys now. Sorry.
Well, it's a lot of work, too. I have a guy friend. He's like, I've had threesomes. He's like, it's exhausting. He's like, I got to make them both happy. Well, he's like, one good woman, I'm psyched. Why
right,
two?
Right.
It's already hard enough.
Yeah, well, I think guys also, they, you know, like they feel like they're still, you know, they're still propagating the species and they're still, you know, Vikings. And that multiple partners is good and, you know, evolution will only survive if men go out there and
spread their seeds.
Yeah, spread their seeds. And if you have to be stuck with one person the rest of your life, you know, you're looking at death's door.
Yeah.
You know, there's this kind of, and then there's other couples who move beyond that, so I don't
That's
know.
That's what they say. They say, you should, you know, well, evolutionary psychology, we look at that a lot, too. You know, that is true that men are supposed to spread their seeds and women are looking for the caretaker and,
the emotional connection.
Yeah, but then there's a statistic, a study that just came out last week, a statistic that shows that women actually have exceeded men in cheating.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe the men just aren't being truthful.
Well, they were saying before the women weren't being truthful. But they say that women cheat, you know, women, they don't, They have babies with the guy who's going to be the better provider, but they want to go have sex with the bad boy still.
Ooh, yeah. Desperate housewives, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, let's talk about that sex in the media.
Okay.
Do you think that the shows like Desperate Housewives or movies that have these agendas to push envelopes are a good thing or a bad thing? Do you think they help the cause, or do they expose issues, or do they what's the right word I'm looking for? Do they glamorize having relationships outside of a stable relationship? Like, you know, I'm really not functioning as a hip human being unless I stray, I cheat.
I mean, it's the whole, like, tail wagging the dog thing. How do you know? If these studies have shown for years that the percentage of married men cheating was like 50% and women were at 30%. So is the media imitating life, or is life imitating media?
Who knows?
I don't know what to say about that. I mean, I think that it's going to continue to, we can always like bash the media and bash pop culture for, you know, perpetuating this in the media. But I think it's there. And I think the thing that I do like is it brings up certain issues. If you're watching Desperate Housewives and with your partner and your husband turns to you and says, honey, what do you think? You know, I saw you making eyes at the pizza delivery guy. You know, I mean, if it brings it up for a couple to talk about it, then, I mean, that's okay.
Then it's healthy.
Well, it happens a lot. I think that there's people who have told me they've been listening to my show and they're like, wow, my girlfriend and I drove 6 hours. We were driving to, you know, across Canada. And it was interesting because threesomes came up and I asked her if she'd ever want to have one. And she said she'd been thinking about, you know. So I think if there's something there, so you don't have to just at dinner one night say, honey, I've been meaning to talk to you. But if it's on TV or if it's in the media and you're like, what do you think about that? I think it can help.
Right.
In some ways it can help. Sure, does it hurt sometimes to glamorize certain things in the media that can be destructive? Always, but what are you going to do?
Well, I was thinking, like, you know, was it Vincent Spano's movie, Buffalo 66, where, you know, he had sex. Basically, he had on-camera sex.
Uh-huh. With
Brown Bunny. So anyway, Vincent Spano and Brown Bunny, was it Chloe Sevigny?
Yep.
He had on-screen oral sex.
Uh-huh.
You know, is that a good thing? Did he cross an artistic line?
Did Bill Clinton cross the line in politics when he brought that?
Well, no, actually, good point.
They actually showed it. And then we're talking about Bill Clinton in the White House. You know, I didn't have sex with that woman, but, you know, she did something else to me.
But he had fun with her.
He sure did have fun.
Or she had fun with him, whatever.
Right. I don't know if he crossed the line with that. I actually never saw it, but I know the whole, it was at Sundance when I was there, and people watch porn. What about porn?
Right.
I mean, that's everywhere, on the internet. I mean,
and yet we saw, it was so hush-hush, and it's so taboo, but It's driven every industry into...
Every industry. Yeah. Technology. That's why we're
every
here right now.
Every technology industry.
That's why you have a small camera, and that's why we can do the internet, is because everyone wants to watch porn faster, more, whenever they want.
Right.
And now they can. You know, the new iPhone.
Right.
Big screen, surfing the web, everyone's watching porn, you know. Right. You're knocking on the door at work. Where are you? You know, your colleague's in there watching his new iPhone. I don't know.
Using it. One hand using his iPhone. The other hand using...
Yeah.
Taking matters into his own hands.
I remember my dad had a big Betamax, I remember, like, 1975.
And they have a stack of porn?
I think he did. I'm trying to remember.
Mr. M.
We used to watch Saturday Night Live. We used to tape and we watch it, but it probably was for porn, you know.
He had his little stash under
I have no idea. He did have Playboy magazines around the house.
That's not porn. That's the girl next door kind of stuff.
I wish it was only that, right? But it's all relative. You know what I mean? The same arguments about technology right now. Is it distracting us and all the cell phones and the emails and the texting and the voicemail. I mean, what about like when someone put the phone on the wall, you know, 50 years ago in the house and the phone starts ringing and people are like, that's so distracting.
Right, right.
Anyway.
You have to be able to detach from all of it.
You have to detach.
Now, sex is a great way
to... sex.
Yes, attaching again, because you've been detached by all of this technology. Right?
Right. It's hard. I think a lot of people, there's a lot more sex addiction right now.
Mm.
Men and women.
Interesting.
Are much more addicted to sex. They are, at least they're claiming that they are, because they can just surf porn all day long. Why not? You know, they don't even have to use their imagination anymore. I think men, perhaps when they would pleasure themselves at a younger age, or even until a few years ago, they had to use their imagination, right? You have stories in your head.
No,
now
we had
like,
catalogs.
It's right here.
We had lingerie catalogs.
You're right,
every
lingerie
generation
catalogs.
Has something.
You had something, but now, like, why would you even do that? I'm just going to watch it on television or watch it on my computer screen.
And do you think that builds up false... false sense of security in relationships? You know, people glorify, you know, they look at images that have been completely manipulated and completely manufactured, and they think that's how sex is.
I think it is harmful, actually. Yeah. That's something that I do think is harmful, the way that a lot of people are portrayed in porn, because that's a lot of times what anyone, the only thing, if they haven't seen Brown Bunny or more artistic films that show it, because a lot of films don't, they've seen porn, and they've seen women that are enhanced, and they see men who look a certain way, and everybody
who
starts feeling secure.
Who are naturally enhanced.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think, and also, but not just the way people look, I think can be harmful. If that's where people are getting their information about how to have good sex, I think it's harmful. Because not only, again, the way people look, their images, but also certain acts that they do. So women are like, I look like a porn star, so I'm going to do this thing because I bet that turns them on. It's like, no. Like, most of the things that you'd see in porn is visually. It's visual. It's,
right.
It turns, you know, a man on.
Turns a man
visually,
on, right.
But it might not actually be what makes them feel good.
Right.
And so women are imitating media, and men are imitating it and feeling insecure about their size or what they do, and everyone's kind of pretending they're in a porn, and it doesn't even feel good because they're not detached and they're not in their bodies. And they're not really thinking about what feels good.
And attaching emotionally.
Right. I think people have a hard time attaching emotionally. And there's a lot of stress right now. And everyone seems like they're running around really stressed and anxious. And to have really good sex and to connect, I think you have to be in your body and calm and shut everything out.
Right.
Relax.
Right.
Be honest. Communicate.
A zen state.
It's hard to get to.
Yeah, that's
so
a very
like,
good
why
point.
Not just go to my computer and take care of it now? And I don't have to
So
connect.
It's instant gratification as opposed to really slowing your life down.
Yep.
And really focusing inward to
right.
maximize experience.
Yeah, right. That's what we try to tell people, that breathing and tell your partner what you want. And I think a lot of times men, another thing that comes up all the time is that men, they're really confused about what, I'm not sure if she feels good or did she fake it or was that right? And it's like, pay attention, like slow down. Like everyone's in their heads, men and women. And it's like, well, how did her body move? And how did she sound? And what'd she say? And just, the answers are there. But
right.
Everyone's in their head and worried and insecure. We all are. I'm sure you are too sometimes. Although you don't look like an insecure
right now,
man. You
right
seem
now.
very
I'm feeling very
virile and macho.
No, very insignificant right now. What was the biggest surprise when you started the show? The ease of it? The ease of the conversation, maybe?
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise of the show has been just that people are really responding to it and that people really like it and
right.
that they really are learning, because that was my intention. So that feels really good. And I also feel it's helped me a lot. I mean, you know, being public, and I was a little nervous about, you know, having a show and what
people
are going to think.
Projecting your personality.
Yeah. And a lot of my friends who've never heard it, like, it's just like sitting down with you, Emily. It's like us having dinner. And because
right.
I haven't tried to be anything that I'm not. And
right.
I always say, if I don't know something, I say I don't know. And I'm not an expert, but I think what I do have is I meet a lot of really interesting people, or a lot of people contact me, really good guests, and I just try to bring on a cross-section of the community. And living in San Francisco, we have a lot of people living alternative lifestyles here.
Right.
And so there's a lot of that right outside your door. There's a huge thing right down the street called kink.com. Have you heard of kink.com?
Yep.
It's a large porn site, and they have a huge building called the Porn Palace down the street, and they
really
shoot a lot of videos. And yeah, I mean, it's San Francisco, but it's interesting because a few weeks ago I had this guy on, you know, the S&M and fetishists, and this woman who had a lesbian porn company. But yet W Magazine last month said that San Francisco is like the last bastion of high society. That everyone here, that has a lot of culture and high society, and there's all this people with money and, you know, Silicon Valley. And so it's just an interesting dichotomy, I think, here.
Right. And the reality was, it's right down the street you had this.
Huge porn center.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's something in the paper today about it, that they bought this building at 14th and Mission. They're moving down the street, and everyone's saying, what about public housing? This guy can build a huge $14
right.
million porn thing. But, you know, he makes $17 million a year or something on this porn site. You should check it out.
Yes,
he was on my show.
I have so much time to check it out. I wanted to ask you, how much time do you spend a week researching and reading the books and the literature that you're sent? And
a lot.
Following up with the experts.
Most of my time, I'd say.
Most of your time.
No, I mean, that's where I'd like to be spending most of my time. I spend a lot of time with business issues and trying to figure out
how to take it to the next level.
Yeah. But I spend a lot of time reading. My whole entire house is like sex books and sex toys. I always say this. It's funny if someone comes over, a guy, if I'm on a date or something, I'm sure it's like, if you look at my bookshelf, it's like, Men Who Can't Love, If the Buddha Dated, Turning Him On, Turning Her On, you know, What She Really Means. It's all sex books.
This guy's intimidated before he gets out of the door.
Everyone keeps saying that, like, our guy's intimidated by you. But I don't find myself intimidating, but maybe. Maybe that's happening. I don't have that much time to date right now. I'm just talking about it. It's true.
Are you available? Our cameraman.
No, I don't feel bad for me.
No, I don't feel bad. I think you're doing all right.
I'm okay.
I think you look great.
Thanks. Well, I feel good.
Right.
You look good, too.
Thank you.
How do you feel?
Richard, do you have any questions?
How do you feel, Richard? How's your sex life?
Great.
Good. You look happy, satisfied. Yes.
So when you're in this zone where you're just as curious to find out as perhaps the callers finding out about themselves, if they're normal, abnormal.
Right.
Do you think that your curiosity helps that?
Yes.
You know, Dr. Ruth is more of an expert, so she's telling you what you should do.
Right. I found myself giving it some advice lately just because I've been hearing so many stories and there are certain patterns that have emerged. And I've learned so much because every week we do have people who are experts, even if they're a happily married couple and they've been together 20 years and they're having great sex. They're experts in a way. Right. So people call in and ask those questions. But do I find, say your question again. Do I find what? That it's, say that question again.
I don't know. What did I
What did he say? Do I callers, do I find that, what did he just say?
So are you still curious?
I am still curious. And I think that that's why it works. Don't you think, like, when you're really passionate about what you do, which is passion and curiosity, I think, are tied. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm constantly learning and challenging myself and challenging my listeners. And so it's endless. Everyone says, oh, God, because I've been talking about doing the show 5 minutes a week. And like, aren't you going to run out of material? I'm like, no, everyone has a story. There's so much to learn. It's endless. Because even people who are like really in touch sexually or doing things that you wouldn't even believe that they're doing, you know, threesomes are like nothing to them. They're trying everything, but they're committed, but they have three primary partners, but then they tie each other up and they go to Burning Man and they're still going deeper with their sex. Like, they're still challenging themselves. There's like all these different levels of sexuality. And so I think I'm just learning and inspired.
And how about the creep out factory? You know, like the pedophiles and people that you just feel like you're not getting a good vibe from it.
Yeah.
How do you deal with
that? I hang up on them.
You just hang up?
Yeah. I don't get a lot of creepy calls. You'd think that I would, but I actually have not.
And thank God you have no stalkers.
I've had a few letters and got a letter from San Quentin. But no, I think everyone does. A lot of people
I get letters all the time from San Quentin.
No, I have not any stalkers. I do not have any stalkers.
Right.
Really. No, not yet.
Right.
I mean, people call a lot and email a lot, but I don't feel threatened. I don't feel like my life is in danger.
Right.
Yeah.
Good.
Unless, you seem safe.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, I'm fine. Do you get stalked?
No. I'm happy if somebody recognizes me. You know, my ego is so frail. You're kidding me. I can't handle rejection at all.
I know. It's hard.
It's hard.
That's a thing, too, being public and having people like love your show, and then someone hates it, and you're like,
why do you hate it?
Yeah. What do you hate?
Yeah. No, that's the thing. You want people to really enjoy the experience, I think. And, podcasting is so personal because you really feel like, well, I'm playing to my audience, which is me, and if the rest of you like that, that's great. And as the audience gets larger, then you get people writing in. They say, well, I'd like to see more of that.
Right.
And sometimes you're like, I don't know.
It's really hard to walk that line.
That.
It's so hard to not be like chasing that. Oh, you want that? You want more of that? I should do that. So I try to, you know, take all the, you know, feedback and criticism, and then I check in, and I'm like, okay, there has been a lot of freaks on the show lately, or yeah, we've had way too many, you know, sex therapists on the last few weeks. But then basically, I just check in with what I want to do because that's how the show started, and you can't. I don't want to lose that.
Right.
I started having an idea about real people telling their stories about sex,
and you don't want to get away. That's going to be the dilemma, you know, as you have sponsorship come.
Yeah,
it's
going to be a dilemma,
and
also just getting sponsors for a sex show is also.
Is it really?
I would think it would be a little more difficult. There's certain lifestyle companies that would be good, but some people just don't maybe want to be associated with sex. I haven't had to do that much sponsorships. I'm starting to do that more now, but you know, certain companies, I think, you know, don't want to be. But my show, if you listen to it, though, the thing about it, which is why I think I have had more luck than once they listen to it, is it's not like raunchy, dirty.
Right.
It's like educational.
It's not
it's
Al
like,
Goldstein.
No. It's like real.
When are you going to have Al Goldstein on? Ron Jeremy, he hasn't been on the show. He's everywhere. Okay.
No,
good.
Get him on my show.
All right.
I'd love him. I had a few porn stars.
Right.
Because just what they didn't tell me, though, you know, not like, show me your tits.
Right.
Unless they want to.
Right.
But I'm like, how did you, so you've had sex with 300 men. I mean, how does that affect your sex? I'm the girl asking, the woman asking a woman. I'm not some guy who's like, wow, baby, look at me. I'm like, wow, so what are your tips?
Right.
Tell me something.
Right.
It's like girls talking, but then all the guys are listening.
Right.
It's fun. I love it. I have to say, it's like my favorite part of the week doing the show.
Good. Emily, thanks so much for being on The Culture Catch and continued success in 2007.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I hope you have good sex this year.
You too.
Thanks. We'll see you soon from The Culture Catch.
Baby, take off your coat. Real slow. Baby, take off your shoes. Yeah, I'll take your shoes. Baby, take off your dress. Yeah.
can leave your hat on. You can leave your hat on.
I'd like to thank today's sponsor, Mophie.com. Mophie loves you. And how do I know? Well, go to Mophie.com to find out. M-O-P-H-I-E. This is Dusty Wright for the Culture Catch. As always, converge is the word. We'll see you soon.